Football Weekly is on the air.
Hi, this is Hub Arkush, and along with Eric Edholm, it is our great pleasure to bring you this week's edition of Pro Football Weekly. All 32 teams have now got their exhibition games underway, and we've got all the news and notes fit to print and talk about.
Some bad news for the Browns, some good news for a couple of star linebackers, and history was made with the first female referee.
It's all just ahead on this week's edition of Pro Football Weekly.
Pro Football Weekly is on the air.
Hi, everybody. Thank you so much for being with us again this week for Pro Football Weekly on the radio. I am Hub Arkush, the publisher and editor here, and I am joined by my co-host, our senior editor, Eric Edholm. And we have hooked up the Pro Football Weekly hotline to our offices. We will be visiting with the entire Pro Football Weekly editorial staff this weekend. And we start with senior editor Nolan Naraki. Nolan, also, of course, the author of our NFL Draft Preview book and our Draft Preview Guide magazines. He's the lead talent evaluator for Pro Football Weekly, both college and pro. And Nolan, as training camps have heated up, there is major concern in two cities, and we're going to start fairly close to our Chicago-based offices where Brian Urlacher practiced, and I was actually in Bears camp the first couple of weeks. He practiced the first 3 days and hasn't practiced since. He missed six straight practices. He had not practiced leading into their first preseason game against the Broncos, and there is considerable angst amongst Bears fans whose hopes are very high for this season. What are you hearing about the Urlacher knee injury situation?
Well, everything I've been told, Hub, is that the Bears are taking preventative measures to make sure that he's going to be on the field. They're very confident that he's going to be okay. He entered camp in tip-top shape. He's entering a contract year. They feel good about where he stands. They just want to make sure he's going to be healthy and on the field, and they see no reason to rush him onto the field. So I think he's going to be in good shape, and they haven't brought anybody else in. I think if they were panicked, we'd see some help and some reinforcements really coming in and trying to prepare during the preseason, but that has not happened yet.
You know, Eric, the intriguing thing here, and I've heard the same thing in camp that Nolan has heard, but the two things you got to look at, this was a pretty ugly knee injury in the final game of the season last year, and Brian elected not to have surgery on the knee. There was a choice to go in, scope it, see if it needed to be cleaned up, or to rehab it. And then, while I agree again with what Nolan's saying, he did practice the first three practices, and then they sat him down for a while. Now, he doesn't seem to be in any distress. You see him stand on the sidelines. He's joking with teammates. But Lord knows, in Lovie Smith's defense, this is critical.
You're talking about a guy who can, you know, who has to drop 25, 30 yards in coverage at times, and has got to be rangy, and you've got an aging linebacking core without a ton of established depth. So I think it's absolutely essential that he's out there, at least in some form. And, you know, like you said, he is the captain of his defense. I happen to think Lance Briggs is one of the best in the game, too, and I think in the short term, he could pick up if Urlacher would have missed a couple games. But beyond that, that's asking a lot of that group.
Well, and the interesting thing about this team, guys, is that they've got four All-Pros on defense. Urlacher, Julius Peppers, Lance Briggs, and Peanut Tillman all are in their mid-30s. Mm-hmm. And this is their fear, is that if one of these guys isn't healthy, it really turns things around. Now, a very young team, Nolan, the Carolina Panthers, arguably the most improved team in the league last year, went from 2 wins to 6 wins. They want to take another step this year. They were without John Beeson for the better part of last season. They hope to have him this season. What is the word down there?
Well, he had a minor tweak in his hamstring, and it was reported that it could be something serious. From what I'm hearing, that's all it was a minor tweak. They're taking preventative measures, trying to keep him off of the field and make sure he's all right. He's coming off of an Achilles injury last season that forced him out all year. He is the defensive heartbeat of that defense, the tempo setter, and they need to make sure he's out there. They've been very encouraged by what they've seen from Luke Kuechly. He's been everything he was advertised as being coming out and more. They've been very impressed with him. So pairing them together, if they can keep them both on the field, would be a dynamite package for the Panthers.
And you'd have to think they have a little more flexibility in the Bears in the sense that Kuechly can play the outside, he can play the middle, he's been outside in camp, played middle in college. And you've got a guy like James Anderson, who, not a special athlete, but at least played pretty well last year. That's a little more comfort in that situation, wouldn't you say?
Yeah, they definitely have some depth there. Thomas Davis is coming back, too. They're hoping he could stay healthy. So, you know, if all things go right, they could be much better in the middle of that defense.
All right, Nolan, it's that time of the year when everybody is looking for their surprise teams. Now, I wrote my column, I can't remember if it was last week, a couple weeks ago, about the simple fact that in the NFL, half the playoff teams don't get back. Over the last 16 seasons, on average, there's been 6 returners, 6 teams have fallen out, 5 last year. Who are the surprise teams, or at least a couple, that you think this year make the leap, teams that were not in the playoffs last year that you could see jumping back in this year?
Well, the Bills are the most glaring. I think they have really improved that defensive line with Mario Williams and the addition of Mark Anderson in free agency. Dave Wansant's now going to be running the defense. Kyle Williams is returning, so I think they're going to be much better on that defensive line. The offensive line is solid in the middle. The big question is whether Ryan Fitzpatrick's going to be able to make it down the stretch, how he's going to play in November and December. And they did go out and sign Vince Young, so I think they've prepared for the possibility that he may not be as good as down the stretch as he they would like him to be. The other team that really stands out to me is the Tennessee Titans. They have an excellent offensive line. They have a lot of depth all the way around. Mike Munchak's entering his second year. I think they'll be much better all the way around if they can get the play out of Jake Locker in the second year, starting as a rookie, you know, provided that he beats out Matt Hasselbeck like they're expecting. I think that's going to be the key, just managing him down the stretch, what Chris Palmer is able to do containing him.
You know, I look at the Titans, and I agree with you talent-wise. You just wonder about the mental approach of Kenny Britt and Chris Johnson and some of the kids that they depend on. A couple other teams that you had mentioned to me, Nolan. We've got about 30, 45 seconds. I know the Eagles, the Bears, the Bucks. The Eagles and Bears weren't that far off the playoffs last year after being playoff teams 2 years ago. But I think the Bucks might surprise some folks. What are you seeing in Tampa Bay?
Well, they're a very young team with a lot of talent on that roster, and I think GM Mark Domenic did the right thing by going out and finding the college coach who's going to bring some discipline and focus onto that roster. And I think Shiano's going to have the ability to make the same type of impact that Jim Harbaugh did last season in San Francisco as a first-time head coach. He's very disciplined, very organized, and I think he's going to have that team headed in the right direction on the brink of the playoffs.
You know, guys, I've known Greg Schiano since he was a quality control assistant in Chicago in the early 90s. He's a great choice as a head coach. We've got to take a quick break. More Pro Football Weekly in just a moment. You've got Pro Football Weekly on your radio dial. I'm Hub Arkish along with Eric Edholm, and we now welcome in Associate Editor Arthur Arkish. Arthur covers the AFC South. And, you know, Arthur, I got to tell you, I'm trying to decide if Kenny Britt is somewhat harmless and very entertaining, or if he is a tremendous distraction to this football team. And I've talked to people this week in Titans camp who tell me he may be the most talented player that they've ever had. Forget on this team. And when he's been healthy, we've seen he can do some unique things at wide receiver. But it's like this guy goes shopping for ways to get in trouble.
Yeah, there's no shortage of things to talk about, that's for sure. Most recently, Kenny met with the commissioner earlier this week regarding his 8 legal run-ins since joining the league 3 years ago. So it's really been one thing after the next, literally. So less than 24 hours after returning from his meeting with Roger Goodell, he actually missed a mandatory rehab session in Titans camp and was promptly fined just over $9,000 for missing the session, and took to his social media avenue, went on Instagram with a picture of the fine from the Titans, and proceeded to sort of bash the organization for going that route, and clearly showing that he just still doesn't understand where his decision making is taking wrong turns, and as you mentioned, where he's starting to become a bit of a distraction for this football team.
And Eric, here was actually the piece I loved about this last part, and I'm not Mr. Twitter, as you guys know,
yeah.
So I don't know if it was actually if he wrote this on the fine sheet or where it was, but somewhere in his tweet, he commented to his followers, "Don't they know I have kids?" Which apparently was his left-handed explanation as to why he missed a rehab assignment. I mean, that's where I say it's almost kind of, I find it funny. I mean, the shame of it, though, is again, there are those who will tell you this is the most talented wide receiver in the NFL. Not his fault he tore an ACL last year, but ACL rehab is not easy, you know, and this kid just doesn't seem to get it.
Yeah, also I'm making a mental note here to get my Instagram account fired up here. I had Twitter already, but the other one I hadn't gotten quite up to speed on. It's amazing. I mean, it just, you'd think somebody there, you'd think of Mike Munchak as a guy who'd want to keep his players in line. And, you know, we see it on Hard Knocks with Joe Philbin and Chad Johnson. I mean, you know, just certain guys, you just have a hard time getting on the team's page. And, you know, they may play well, they may have all this talent, but boy, in terms of just getting these guys to get in with the program, it just doesn't seem like it goes through their head sometimes.
Yeah, is Instagram the one Zuckerberg just paid a couple billion for?
I don't know.
Yeah, I just bought a new pair of shorts. Arthur, let's get back to another one of your ball clubs, the Houston Texans. They continue to have these minor scares. You know, Andre Johnson with the groin, apparently he's okay. Now Brian Cushing ends up in the hospital?
Yeah, that's right. He has some type of virus that ended up with him being in the hospital for an overnight stay again earlier this week. So the good news is, again, I sound like a broken record, but at least Coach Kubiak said that he believes they have dodged another bullet. This is not believed to be serious. I think more than anything, it was wanting to get him away from his teammates, get him away from his wife to ensure that no one else got sick. So it's something we'll keep an eye on. They do expect him back, but again, something we'll definitely want to monitor is Cushing is always at his best when he's practicing regularly. That was the case last year when he put forth his best season.
Eric, I'm going to say some hopeful news rather than good news out of the New York Giants training camp. Terrell Thomas, who's a guy I like a lot, and I just feared a third straight ACL, a second straight missed season, now reporting, and now this is him reporting, that it's not an ACL tear. He thinks he won't miss more than 6 to 8 weeks. That could have him back by game three or game four. And then beyond that, you talk about a feel-good story. The battle at middle linebacker in the Giants training camp. I mean, on one hand, you've got Chase Blackburn, who, you know, is cut. He's brought back.
Yep.
He gets a Super Bowl ring. And on the other hand, you got Mark Herzlick. And I think everybody knows that story. Now, I felt from everybody I talked to that Herzlick deserved to make the team last year, that he was a contributor, that he was a great special teams guy, a hard work guy. But now you're reporting that people believe that he probably is going to be the starting middle linebacker for the New York Giants for the foreseeable future?
At some point, yeah. I think that's sort of the general consensus, that this guy just isn't a feel-good story, that he's worked so hard. And remember, I mean, before the Ewing sarcoma, before all the, you know, the transplant in his leg and all that stuff, I mean, he was considered a top-10 pick. He was Luke Kuechly 2 years before that. I mean, he had pass rush ability. He was a strong tackler, a rangy guy, playing coverage. I mean, he had a number of interceptions in college. So this is a player they felt like could be a top 10 pick before that, went undrafted, made the team. Everybody said, okay, he's probably just going to be a special teamer, but you started to see him in more defensive packages last year, and now he's battling Blackburn for the starting job. I think Blackburn's probably your weekend starter. I think he probably deserves it based on the way he played down the stretch, but it wouldn't stun me. And if there's any problems at that position, that Herzlick is going to be in there and be the starter.
Well, and Eric, you just touched on the key to that story. It's not just a feel-good story, although it feels great. His sophomore year, Herzlick was a finalist for the Butkus Award.
Dominant.
And Dick told me he was one of the best college linebackers he ever saw.
Yep.
And so first there was, you know, more important life issues. Then there was rehab. Then there was getting back into shape. Last year was as much playing back into shape as anything else.
Yeah.
And now he's starting to look like the player he was early at Boston College. Arthur, one more of your clubs I want to touch on, the Jacksonville Jaguars. Maurice Jones, Drew, rarely do we get personal on these things. We're just reporting the news. But I hope the Jaguars hold tight. I just don't understand what this guy thinks he's doing to his teammates, to his team. He got the contract he wanted, 2 years, 3 seasons ago. I don't understand what he's holding out for. I know he's holding out for money, but I don't understand how he thinks he wins this one.
Yeah, nor do I, but it does sound like you're going to get your wish, because I don't think the Jaguars are budging on this one. As one longtime reporter down in Jacksonville said to me the other day, if you can find a way to get 1,000 rushing yards out of Rashad Jennings, which doesn't seem that impossible because he's been one of the real bright spots in training camp, and you can get just another 600 passing yards out of Blaine Gabbert, another, you know, really likely accomplishment given how bad he was last season and how the numbers were so poor, you've already replaced Mojo's production. I mean, they won 5 games with him last year. I understand he's the rushing champion, but how much better off are they going to be with him? And I think that may be starting to be the line of thinking, at least to a certain extent. The Jaguars, want to run the football, certainly. They think Rashad Jennings can do it as well. As much as anything, they want to send a message that they're not going to negotiate with these guys with 2 years remaining on their contract. Shad Khan's in the mix now. He doesn't want to get off to the wrong start to let him, his players be pushing around the officials.
All right, Arthur, thank you very much. We're going to take another quick commercial break here. Next up, all kinds of news out of Cleveland. Mike Wilkening brings it to you. It's always a fascinating time of the season as we have training camps open everywhere and every one of the 32 NFL teams is a Super Bowl hopeful. And
every one of them?
Well, in their cities they are.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I don't think anybody's picking the Carolina Panthers to go to the Super Bowl. Well, actually, that's not true. Ryan Khalil is guaranteed.
That's
it,
right.
So we'll keep an eye on that. I just started with the Panthers. It could be any one of these teams. But, guys, Cleveland Browns are a team that has been down for some time, and they made big headlines during the offseason. They're making big headlines in training camp, but not the kind that they had hoped for. We welcome in senior editor Mike Wilkening, who covers the AFC North and specifically the Browns. And, Mike, the news that Trent Richardson is having his knee scoped. Now, on one hand, they're trying to, make it a silk purse in saying it's only 3-4 weeks. Maybe he's even back for opening day. Where the sow's ear shows up is this guy had a radical surgery on his knee last January prior to the Browns investing a fortune to draft him with the 3rd pick overall.
I think what's problematic is that it's the same knee. You're having another procedure. Again, it's being described as minor in the ESPN report. And I think when it comes down to it, look, you want to be prudent with a guy who you want to be your franchise back. But, yeah, this is not the sort of news the Browns were looking for at the beginning of camp, certainly, and it's been the latest in kind of an increasingly long line of sort of bad news events for this team.
Well, and we'll follow that with what probably is worse news, because Joe Haden, a first-round pick that they were very wise to make, and a guy that they've kind of tried to make the face of this defense, if not this franchise, appears to be facing a four-game suspension from the commissioner's office for a failed drug test?
Right. ESPN Cleveland's reported it's a failed Adderall test, reportedly. Adderall, one of the banned substances from the league. Obviously, they lose him for any extended period of time. It's going to have a trickle-down effect on that secondary. The depth is hurt. And, you know, Joe Haden is a guy who I think is the best performer in that secondary. And as you can make an argument that on his best, he's, you know, one of the better corners in the league, a rising star at the position. I know the interceptions were down last year, but this is a guy that has a very bright future. And you know, this is a passing league. To lose your best corner is bad news, to say the least.
Why in the world Adderall is on the ban list, I'll never know. I don't get that. We can talk about that in some other forum, I guess. But to me, Wilkie, the number six is a huge one for the Browns this year. They could be starting six rookies. You got Richardson, you got Whedon. Mitchell Schwartz could be their right tackle. Hughes at defensive tackle. Josh Gordon, maybe he steps in as a Johnson, the linebacker. I mean, that is some extreme youth on the one hand. The other, the first six games of the season, unbelievable. Versus Philadelphia, at Cincy, playoff team last year. Versus Buffalo, a team everybody thinks is going to come back. At Baltimore, at the Giants, against the Bengals. That's four playoff teams and the Super Bowl champs. I mean, how is this team ever going to get out to a hot start considering all the problems they're facing right now?
Well, you know, it just seems that this has just come up a tougher schedule to begin the season, as you've pointed out. Last year, I think they had two playoff teams from 2010 in the first 11 games. They couldn't really do anything with that schedule. So, look, you know, that's a necessary byproduct of them getting older at various times. Eric Mangini brought in some veterans. You change coaches. You change blueprints. You change personnel. They have really tried to build via the draft. You know, you're going to get younger in that process. I think there's growing pains are likely with this team this year. I would think that they would say that that'd be a necessary part of the process, but, you know, the rebuilding, the retooling, whatever you want to call it, kind of continues on in Cleveland in a tough division. And, you know, like you said, the schedule's really not doing them any favors this year.
You know, Eric, I'm going to get way out over my skis on this one, but I believe the issue with Adderall, I know for a generation or two ago it was Ritalin that was prescribed for children with hyperactivity issues, and it was abused by some, and so it was replaced. The drug of choice seems to be Adderall to treat hyperactivity these days. It is a stimulant, and I think it's a combination of it being a stimulant and being abused in a lot of schools, both on college campuses and in high schools around the country. So my guess is that's why it's one that they keep a very close eye on. Nonetheless, we don't want any NFL players abusing any drugs,
no.
And you don't want to fail the test. So disappointment in Cleveland, and of course the injury to Phil Taylor. It just seems to get worse and worse for them. Quickly, though, I want to ask you about the Detroit Lions, Mike, because here's a team that had everything going for them, and the one thing it seemed they clearly needed to do was get better in the secondary during the offseason. They got worse. They let Eric Wright leave via free agency. He was arguably one of their two or three best defensive backs. Aaron Berry was going to take that spot. He's been cut because of his off-the-field issues. And now Louis Delmas, who is arguably their best player in the secondary safety, has to have a minor procedure on his knee. They hope he will be back in time for the opener. But this is not good news for the Lions as they look at their greatest weakness.
No, and Delmas is such an important part of that defense. He missed the end of last regular season. The secondary, kind of fell off a little bit. Injuries really started hit towards the end of the year, and that was a big one for them, and they need him. And that again, we're talking about another procedure, and Jim Schwartz talking about this as a, you know, sort of a week-to-week, quote-unquote, sort of situation is not what you want to hear coming out of Detroit.
All right, Mike, thank you very much. We've got another commercial break here, but we've got a lot more news, notes, and analysis from around the NFL. 32 training camps are humming. We're trying to keep it going here at Pro Football Weekly. Yes, we are. Hub Arkish and Eric at home hosting for you this week. Executive editor Dan Arkish joins us in this segment. Dan spent some time at the Green Bay Packers training camp this past week, and we'll get to Dan in just a second. But Eric, before we do, tragic situation in Philadelphia earlier this week, actually last Sunday morning. Garrett Reed, the 29-year-old son of head coach Andy Reed, was found dead in his dorm room at about 7:20 in the morning. He had been working with the club, the strength and conditioning coaches. Of course, his checkered past is well known. Don't want to go into any of that. But just a horrible story for the Reed family, for the extended Eagles family, and hard to even process as you're in your first week of training camp, getting ready for a new season with a team with very high hopes.
Yeah, no question about it. I know the players are really rallying around Andy, and so is the rest of the NFL. I mean, nearly 1,000 people were at the service, including many NFL dignitaries, past and present. And I can tell you that I spoke with one coach who was there, and he said, it was amazing. Andy is so strong. We have so much care for this guy. We're trying to come in and console him. He was the one consoling them. He was saying to everybody, I'm going to be fine. I'm going to be all right. You know, thanks for coming, that sort of thing. So he got right back to work. You know, they had the preseason game this week, and he was at practice right before then. I mean, it's just tragic. The kid has been trying to turn his life around, and you just hope the best for the family.
Yeah, his battles with drug addiction, of course, are very well known.
Yep.
And I would say to all of our listeners, first of all, from all of us at Pro Football Week, our thoughts and prayers are with Andy Reid and his immediate family and the extended Eagles family. And to all of you who just can't wait to get an answer, just chill. Just wait, okay? We don't know what happened here. There is no point in speculating. It's a tragic, tragic loss. A 29-year-old young man struck down in the prime of life, and the news of what may have been the cause will come soon enough. Right now, we just hope everybody's thoughts and prayers are with the Reed family. And with that, we do welcome in Executive Editor Dan Arkish. Dan, you were in Green Bay, and Green Bay, the thoughts are always with the Packer family. And one of the things that jumped out at you is this is a team with plenty of cash that could be staring at some significant contract issues in the next couple of years, specifically Aaron Rodgers and Clay Matthews. What are you hearing on that front?
Well, Hub, you know, it can't help but be a topic. You know, you also have to also mention Greg Jennings, who is going to be playing in his contract year. I mean, those three guys are key guys. And, you know, at the moment, the Packers are very well healed, and they have the resources to be able to, you know, make a major signing. And it's really a gut feeling on my part, although it's shared by a lot of close observers. It's quite possible that, you know, they could re-up with A-Rod or Clay Matthews, one or the other. I kind of think it might be Matthews, but they have a history of doing signings, you know, late in the preseason, right before the season starts. And it's just something that I just think might be in the cards.
Now, Dan, the Packers' weakness last season was well documented. They couldn't stop the pass. But I think everybody who realizes that the personnel on that team, the secondary is pretty good shape. You know, when now that they're healthy, they've got some people back there who can do a good job. When you go back and look, it was obvious there wasn't enough consistent pass rush. Matthews didn't get much help. They drafted a kid in round one, Nick Perry, who was expected to vie for that outside linebacker spot, but it sounds like second-round pick Jarrell Worthy might be the more immediate contributor. What did you see out of Worthy and Perry?
Well, you know, Worthy, you can't help but be noticed right away, Eric. He has an amazing quickness, a real burst off the ball, and he really, you know, is a good kid. I mean, he's constantly talking, very friendly, has a huge smile on his face. He really has brought a lot of energy, you know, to the team, along with some veterans like Anthony Hargrove. And so, yeah, they're excited about what he might be able to do as a nickel pass rusher alongside B.J. Raji. Now, Perry, you know, the thing about him, he's just so physically imposing. And the light, I think, is going to go on for him. It hasn't quite yet. But, you know, I think they like what they see in him, certainly his size and speed, and he can get low, you know, in attack. So it's going to be real interesting to see if he can be that all-important complement to Clay Matthews as a pass rusher.
Eric, let me ask you very quickly about one of your clubs, the Kansas City Chiefs. I am constantly puzzled by who advises these players with these franchise tenders. Dwayne Bowe, not in camp. Nothing good is going to come of this.
No.
The only way he plays in the NFL this year is under the franchise tender. I believe the value of that this year is in the $10 million
yep.
range. Straighten me out on that.
Yep.
And he can be fined for missing camp. He's not going to get paid if he sits out regular season games. And if he doesn't come back week 10, he loses a year of vesting in free agency. It makes no sense. What is going on there?
Same thing in the division with Vincent Jackson a couple years ago. It just seems like this is his decision more than it is a smart agent who would say, listen, Dwayne, you've got to get in there and help yourself out. If you want to leave next year, that's great. You want to get a new deal. Luckily, Jonathan Baldwin has played well. Luckily, Tony Moiaki's back from injury, so they've got some options there. Bowe not helping himself, though, and you know, I'm not sure if he'll report right before the season or not, but right now it's an unknown.
And the interesting thing here, if healthy, I think the Chiefs can go to the Super Bowl.
Yeah.
I love this team.
Scary.
This is a key factor in that happening. We've got to take a commercial break. More Pro Football Weekly in a moment. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Hub Arkush, Eric at home alongside as we bring you this week's edition of Pro Football Weekly. And we now welcome in Associate Editor Dan Parr. Dan covers the NFC South and a portion of the AFC West. And in the NFC South, we had talked at the top of the show with Nolan Naraki. We were going around the league, and Nolan mentioned the situation with the John Beeson injury, indicated that he thinks, Dan, that it's really more precautionary than anything else, that they do hope to have him back and healthy this year after missing him last year. And yet they are still, or I shouldn't say still, but now apparently wildly excited about their first-round draft pick, Luke Kuechly, not because he's there to replace a John Beeson or a Thomas Davis, but because if they can keep Thomas Davis healthy on the field, they get Beeson back. Kuechly's the player he is. They think last year's biggest weakness could be this year's biggest strength.
And they're also very high on James Anderson, who starts on the strong side for them. So they feel like they have, all of a sudden, you know, after going through last year and all the terrible injuries they encountered with Davis and Beeson being out, they have some really good depth at that position. And they're going to be able to rotate guys in and out and have Thomas Davis kind of play a situational role. But Kuechly so far has really shined. You know, you expected him to come in and make an immediate impact in the running game, but you're seeing him be very disruptive, getting his hands on a lot of passes. And he's a guy that they, you know, were counting on to contribute from day one in a big way, and it looks like he's been as advertised thus far.
Now, another position they don't have quite as much depth at historically has been wide receiver. We all know about Steve Smith. They've held him out of practice a little bit this past week with a knee injury. He's going to be fine. But what about the other spots? You know, we've been waiting for Brandon LaFell to kind of grab that number two spot by the horns, hoping that maybe somebody could push him, too. You know, I think everybody was expecting maybe David Geddes, who's flashed in the past. Tell us what's going on at that position. Is it LaFell's job to lose?
It is, and there's no doubt they wanted a competition at this position, and they're not getting it. Geddes has been on the pup list. He's working his way back. You know, he had the torn ACL last year that kept him off for all season, and now he has a hamstring issue as well. You know, they're hoping that he is going to be ready before the end of camp, which is August 15th, so we'll see. About him, if he can come back and make a late run at this at some point, maybe in the season, does he push LaFell? I guess it's possible, but right now, LaFell is the guy going to be starting opposite Steve Smith, and the Panthers, you know, you hear things from coaches and stuff, and the question about him isn't so much talent, but how badly does he want this position? That's why they wanted that competition. They wanted to light that fire under him, and it hasn't been lit. So, you know, he's able to kind of coast a little bit on his natural ability now with nobody really pressing for his job.
Dan, one other question I have about the Panthers. I have heard numerous former NFL head coaches and GMs, all of whom seem to be media people now on one station or another, talking in the last couple of weeks about Cam Newton and his adjustment in the Panthers' offense this year. And they were all quick to point out that as much of an epiphany as Newton was last year, and he was, greatest rookie year in the history of the game at the quarterback position, they really didn't ask him to run the offense that Ron Rivera and Bob Chudzinski know they have to run if they're going to be serious playoff and Super Bowl contenders, and that the goal this offseason, with a full offseason, is to get him where he needs to be. Is that, in fact, what's happening in training camp, or were they so enthralled with what he did last year that they're going to let him continue to try and run some hybrid version of Chudzinski's, you know, original game plan?
Well, there's no question they want to do more with this offense and open up the playbook more and give him more responsibilities, but they're going to be very careful about not having more than he can handle. I mean, they don't want to completely shackle him with too much. They still look at this offense as, you know, they understand the situation at wide receiver. They went out and signed Mike Tolbert in the offseason to be this a guy who can take some of the pressure off Cam Newton on the goal line, expose him to less hits. They want him on the field, and they want him to have enough feel comfortable with the amount of work that's being placed on him in terms of knowing the playbook. So I don't expect them to be looking all that much different, but certainly they do want to progressively improve over the course of the year in terms of the number of plays at their disposal.
Dan, one other question for you about another one of your clubs, the Oakland Raiders. Darren McFadden could be the best running back in the NFL if he could ever stay on the field for 15 or 16 weeks. Last couple of years, they had an embarrassment of riches in depth. Now Michael Bush is in Chicago. They went out and signed Mike Goodson. People are a little worried about his health. When you worry about McFadden's health and we look what's behind him, could the Raiders have a problem at running back?
I think it's very possible. You know, it's a very tenuous situation when you're putting so much stock in Darren McFadden, a guy who's never made it through a season fully healthy, never had a 16-game season. He isn't like that injury-prone label, but until he comes out and has that full year when he stays on the field, that's going to stick to him. So you don't have much depth at the position right now. You're counting on Tywan Jones, a guy who's beat up with a hamstring injury right now, and Mike Goodson, who suffered a scare with his with a neck injury, but they do expect him to be okay and get back on the field sooner rather than later. But, you know, in their first preseason game, we're going to see a lot of Lonnie Miller, an undrafted rookie who really his only time has been with the Cowboys. He was on the practice squad with the Raiders toward the end of last season, but, you know, not a guy you want to have as your number one option behind Darren McFadden. You have to wonder at some point, are they going to feel the need, you know, to go out and get another guy, whether it's through a trade or through free agency? They have Marcel Reese, a fullback who can be a versatile weapon, can catch the ball, can carry the ball as well, but depth at running back is sorely lacking for the Raiders right now.
All right, Dan, thank you very much. We've got another commercial break to take here, but still plenty of way we hear it. We go in AFC East in just a moment with Kevin Fishman. And the beat goes on here at Pro Football Weekly. Again, Hub Arkish and Eric at home. We're now welcoming in Associate Editor Kevin Fishbane. And Kevin, the Patriots to me have been a fascinating off-season story, training camp story, because this is a team that is the defending AFC champions. They are a dynasty in the AFC for the most part, except they haven't won a Super Bowl in a while. They've been back to a few and lost them. And so what will the difference be this year? A lot of people feel it has to be on defense. Early in the off-season, raving about Dante Hightower, who they were able to draft lower than they thought he would be available. And that was after they had taken Chandler Jones. Now, Chandler Jones was supposed to be the developmental prospect, the guy who people thought had great ability but didn't know how quickly he'd be ready. And yet you're hearing that early in training camp, the excitement is building, huh?
Yeah, well, he went from the spring to kind of being a backup guy who showed some flashes, and then the summer started, and he started seeing more snaps with the first team, and now, you know, some people are saying he's lined up to start for this team. You never know with Bill Belichick what kind of defenses front he'll use, but Chandler Jones is really impressing people. He's got a nice arsenal of pass rush moves. He's obviously built very well, and he can move around, whether it be inside, outside, and they really need some explosive talent off that defensive line after losing Andre Carter and Mark Anderson.
All right, Eric, I want to get to a couple of AFC West teams that Kevin covers, but first I've got to ask you, the Vikings on your beat. Adrian Peterson continues to rehab on the PUP list, the physically unable to perform list, and yet you're hearing this coming week that there's a possibility that status could change?
I think he's going to be active. I think he's going to play in the preseason, and obviously he had a little scare with the food poisoning thing a couple weeks ago with the fish, but right now that's the only thing holding him back. He's way ahead of schedule, you know, done some cutting on the side, looks great going forward and backwards and stuff, so I think there's a lot of progress and a lot of hope. Originally the plan seemed to be that he would play week one, but now I'm hearing that, just sort of reading between the lines based on what I've heard, that you know, you could see him get a few carries just to get his feet wet in the preseason.
All right, Kevin, the Denver Broncos, you're on that beat as well. And I don't want to get into a whole breakdown of the Broncos because I just don't see them as the strong contender in the AFC that a lot of folks do. But specifically one area I think everybody can agree on, this is a team that even with Peyton Manning has always wanted to run the football. We know John Fox insists on running the football, and yet they're counting on an aging, and I can't really say ageless, Willis McGahee. Remember, coming out of Miami, we never knew if he'd be healthy enough to play. You know, now he's had a great NFL career, but he's the guy. No, Sean Marino has been a big disappointment after being drafted first a couple years ago. I love Ronnie Hillman out of San Diego State, but he's undersized and probably should have stayed in school for a year. Where are they going to find the running game?
Yeah, well, it's going to be, I mean, they're going to be hoping that Willis McGahee can, you know, do what he did last year. He's not going to get the same amount of carries, but remember, he rushed for 1,000 yards last season, and they're hoping that, you know, he can have an impact like other, some of running backs that Peyton Manning's been with have had. Now, they kind of took a loss when Mario Fannin got hurt, and maybe he wouldn't have cracked the top three, but he was a guy that a lot of people said in the summer looked great. He's going to have another season-ending injury. So you mentioned Moreno, and he's fourth on the depth chart right now, but we hear that's kind of misleading. He has run some with the first team. He really needs to prove himself as a pass catcher, and that's the way he gets in. And they're really hoping with Ronnie Hillman that he'll kind of be the guy that he'll eventually, you know, his skill set really fits well with an offense that Peyton Manning's running because he can catch balls out of the backfield. And if he can get stronger and if he can be healthy, I think they're hoping he can really be that second back.
Well, and here's the fascinating thing, guys. I'm sure that what John Fox envisions is almost a Darren Sproles-type role, because this kid can be a factor in the return game if they choose to use him there as well. But Darren Sproles is 2 inches shorter than Hillman and about 25 pounds bigger and stronger. This is a very small kid. And so I think, Eric, that's what you got to watch on Ronnie Hillman in Denver.
Yeah, I like the kid a lot. I think he's very talented, obviously. But like you said, Darren Sproles kind of his own beast. Kevin, I want to switch gears a little bit and go to the Chargers, another team on your beat. And it seems like they get a little dose of good news, a little dose of bad news. The good news is that Antonio Gates looks like he's back, that he could have a healthy and productive season. Bad news, offensive line, seems like they add a new body there every week. What's the status of both those situations?
Yeah, well, you mentioned the positive. Antonio Gates, we hear he's looking great. You know, he's kind of trying to be lighter on his feet. You know, he had those foot injuries a couple of years ago, and that's really hampered him the last two seasons. He's kind of a forgotten guy. I mean, people forget about him. He's getting up, obviously up there in age, but he's still their number one target. He's still going to be the receiver that Phillip Rivers looks to first, especially with Vincent Jackson gone, and we hear he's just looked phenomenal in camp. But you mentioned that offensive line, probably the biggest weakness on that offensive side of the football. And left tackle, Jared Gaither, we know he's had injury problems throughout his career. He played 15 games last season. The Chargers signed him and to an extension. And then this offseason, he's been out recently with back spasm. And that's a big problem, because that's the kind of thing that can be recurring. They have an undrafted rookie, Mike Harris, who's been playing with the first team, and they really like him. But I don't think anybody expects them to go into week one with an undrafted rookie starting, to protect Phillip Rivers' blind side. They brought in Anthony Davis this week. So, just to kind of add some extra insurance. They're really hoping that Gaither gets back, but he's frustrated, and that's really something to watch this summer.
Guys, I'm just fascinated by the AFC West. I mean, last year, all four teams within the game of each other at 8-8 and 7-9. Now, I'm not saying you get a Super Bowl team out of this, but I think a couple of these teams, the Chiefs and the Chargers, have a chance to be very good. Broncos, we'll see. Raiders, nobody expecting anything, but probably the most competitive division in football. We take another commercial break, and we're back with more Pro Football Weekly.
And now with the publisher's pen, the publisher and editor of Pro Football Weekly, Hub Arkish.
Eric, thank you very much. We're going to talk about a little history that was made in the NFL this past week. Actually, last Thursday night, as the Packers squared off with the Chargers, the first female official in the history of the NFL, Shannon Easton, worked the game. It is a red-letter moment, and you know what? Our hat's off to Shannon Easton. I mean, bottom line, if she's qualified and capable, she should be working the game. It shouldn't be a gender issue, so we think that's great. Whether a glass ceiling has been broken or not, don't know. Not sure how many other females want to do these games. But here's the question some people are asking. Was she ready, or did the NFL go there to cover the fact that a lot of people are very concerned about this lockout of the real officials? Some of these folks that are doing these preseason games are simply not qualified. They are risking their athletes, their best assets, and they've got to get a deal done there. Also, the distraction of the court cases with the suspended players. Is this a publicity stunt by the NFL, or did Shannon Easton belong out there? Well, our hat's off to her. We congratulate her for getting it done. We'll see how many more ladies take the field in stripes over the next couple weeks. That's going to do it for this week's edition of Pro Football Weekly. Our thanks to Dave Olson. Great job engineering and producing this week for the vacationing Randy Meyer. Also, our thanks to Syndication Network, our home studio. And most of all, our thanks to all of you for listening. Join us again next week, same time, same station, for Pro Football Weekly.